This episode of Health Vibes is brought to you by the brand you trust the most, Jolly's Pharmacy Limited, leading the way in healthcare.
Introducing Jolly's Pharmacy, brand new website, www.jollys.dm. It's your time to jump the line. Shop now at jollys.dm and have your items delivered in the comfort of your office. No more standing in line. No need to use your lunch hour to shop. Hassle-free shopping, safe and secure. Jollys.dm features rush delivery, 1 hour. In-store pickup, regular delivery, 5 p.m. Cut-off time, 4 p.m. It's your time to jump the line. www.jollys.dm. Jolly's Pharmacy, leading the way in healthcare.
Jolly's Pharmacy presents a new and innovative radio program, Health Vibes. Every Wednesday morning on Q95 FM. Health Vibes, hosted by Carlton Lando and Pearl Fontaine Butler. Health Vibes from 10:15 to 11 a.m. It's not just your average talk show. It's appealing and educational with a bit of humor. Real vibes on your health. Now, that's the vibe. Health Vibes on Q95. Every Wednesday from 10:15 to 11 a.m. with Pearl and Carlton. Tune in.
Welcome to Health Vibes, Dominica's most foremost program on health, medicine, nutrition, and wellness, featuring the latest news on conventional and alternative medicine and health care. Now, here's your host, Carlton Lando, and co-host, Pearl Fontaine Butler.
Bonjour. Good morning. It's the Creole season, and so I'm trying to see if I can practice my Creole a bit with a little bonjour, ça qu'a fait, you know, because it beats me up a bit. But we are so happy to be connecting with you on another episode of Health Vibes during the Creole season. And actually, it's the cruise season. The first cruise ship is in port today, and we really want to welcome all of the tourists to the wonderful, the most natural country in the world, Dominica. We are so happy. I am even happier today that my co-host is back. I did say to you last week that she was on some assignment overseas, and she's back. I mean, you cannot not miss that voice, you know, that BBC kind of voice, they call it.
Good morning, Carlton.
Good morning, Pearlie. How are you?
I'm well. Yes. Good morning, Dominica. I'm so happy to be back here, you know, discussing health and wellness with you. Last week I was out. Yes. I represented Dominica at a regional symposium in the health and wellness sector, and I have to tell you, God is moving for us, you know, and I'm just so thankful to have represented Dominica on that level.
Excellent. Well, we have an interesting show today. Very interesting guest today. We have Miss Clara Charles, who is an environmental health officer with the Ministry of Health, and we will be talking about food safety. You know, it's that time of year where the callaloos are made, and the smoked meats and the crab and everything that seem to be natural and delicious, but if they're not done properly, they can become a health hazard.
Clara, thank you for being here with us this morning.
Thanks, Pearl. Good morning to everyone. And I'd like to say also thank you for having us here, Environmental Health, with you all on this show this morning. We have realized that our Dominican cuisine have become a very important aspect of our independence celebration, and therefore food safety should be considered a priority in this independence celebration. So thank you once again for having me here today.
Excellent. So we're going to give you the numbers again. We know that you always call on Health Vibes, and so I'm going to start, and then Pearl will help me along the way. So the first number, the numbers are 449-3095, 449-3096, 449-3097, 616-4257.
Or you can call us on the overseas line, which is 305-432-9624. Again, that's 305-432-9624. Clara, I do have a question. I think that this will lead us into the ongoing discussion. But what is the importance of food safety?
Okay. All right. Well, first we have to look at the definition of food safety. Mm-hmm. Food safety, as defined by the Codex Alimentarius Commission, is the assurance that food will not cause the consumer harm when it is prepared or eaten according to its intended use. Therefore, food safety depends on the condition in which it's produced and prepared. When you come to storage, handling, preparation, all of that, that is important in the aspects of food safety.
Good definition, but we have a caller. Good morning, caller.
Good morning.
Happy Independence, Dominica.
Happy Independence to you. How are you, my friend?
I am thankful for life today.
Yes, we're happy that you have life, that you can, you know, give us a call this morning.
Of course. I always, this is my second home, you can see it. So I always keep abreast. Any particular thing you're going to speak on today?
So we are talking with an environmental health officer on food safety. You know, during this time of year,
yes.
So we're focusing on food safety today.
Food safety.
Yes.
Okay. I'm preparing and preparing stuff and things like that.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I will listen.
Definitely.
I want you to speak on something else, but if there's that is very important.
Yes.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Okay. Thanks for calling. Yes.
So yeah, we were talking about the importance of it. We looked at the definition of food safety.
And we also know that around this time, there are a lot of different types of menus and types of food items being offered for sale to the public. And one of the things that if food safety is not practiced, then we can have the occurrence of foodborne illnesses. And foodborne illnesses, eating contaminated food that can cause you to get sick. You'll have symptoms such as diarrhea, vomiting, and stomach pains, all of these symptoms. So if safe food is not practiced, then we have the occurrence of foodborne illness. And therefore, it is important that food safety, the public be educated about food safety, or consumers or vendors, so that they can make safe practices and safe buying choices, especially during this season.
Okay. So in a nutshell, I mean, I really like what you've defined in terms of food safety, the definition. But we know in Dominica, one of the criteria is that people who are selling food, they need to have food handlers permits. How important is that? And maybe just give us an insight as to who gets the permit. What are some of the prerequisites that people need to have before they actually are given that food handlers permit?
One of the requirements for sale to the public, or even offering food to the public, whether it's for sale or not, because let's say you have a bazaar, you have a fundraising event at your church, you are still offering food to the public. It may not be sale, but it is offered to the public for consumption. The requirement is that persons who prepare food, who sell food, even cashiers, must have a food handler's permit.
Even cashiers?
Yes, because you are involved in the bar or in the vending area. And then, you know, during all these activities, I as a cashier might end up preparing or serving food to the public. So you may have multitask within that, that vending booth. Therefore, it is important that you get certified as a food handler. It is a requirement by law that you be certified for when you are vending or offering food. And the requirements are you have to attend a food handler's training session, which is done every year. It's a requirement. You have to get a medical certificate from a doctor. And of course, you need to bring in your passport size, your ID size photos, so that you can get your ID to put through onto your clothing to say that I am a certified food handler. So these are requirements. And you would also find that we do have difficulties with some of the vendors, because they feel that, why do I have to come to the sessions every year? We know that food safety doesn't change. We have evolving technology in food, yes, but the aspects of food safety, basic hand washing, cleaning and sanitizing, preparation and storage, these are things that are set, you understand? But the vendors seem to think that I am wasting my time. But training is important, because the food handler, the food vendor, is the first person who is first in contact with the food and also last in contact with the food. And if a food handler doesn't practice safe food hygiene practices, then they can contaminate the food. For example, if a food handler, you go to a vending stall and you realize the food handler is not washing their hands. Just look at a food handler, they're not washing their hands. A food handler is not washing their hands can have a number of bacteria on their hands. They could have E. coli, they could have Salmonella, you can have Staphylococcus aureus, you can even have viruses such as norovirus. And there, you in turn can, when you contact the food, pass on this bacteria and viruses onto the food, and therefore you can get somebody ill. Therefore, the training aspect, training a food handler in what to do when they are practicing, how to practice safe food, what you should do when you're preparing food, and all of this is important in preventing foodborne illnesses, within our population.
Let me ask you, there have been notions whereby people feel, well, oh, the food was boiled or it was fried and it went through 100 degrees Celsius, all bacteria and everything is dead. Is that true?
Because no, that is not really true. Okay, because you have the aspects of holding hot foods at hot foods, cold foods at cold foods, and you also have the aspect of time, temperature abuse. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we were growing up, we had the concept that if I cook my lunch at 6 o'clock in the morning, I can leave it on my stove until I come home at lunchtime and I feed my children. Mm-hmm. And then you might just reheat for a short period of time. However, that aspect is not truly correct. Because if you cook hot meals right now, as soon as it's cooked, you should maintain a temperature of 141 degrees Fahrenheit and above. That means the food should be hot until it is finished serving.
Most of us don't do that.
Yes, I know.
I don't do that.
That is why if you go through our vending booths, like through the Creole activities, for Creole in the Park, or even Creole festivals, or even some of our major events in Dominica, you'll find environmental health officers are doing surveillance within these events. And one of the requirements is that they have to have hot holding equipment, which is most likely stone warmers, or you might have electrical warmers also, where the temperature has to be maintained until all the food is sold out. That is a requirement for vending, because you will find that over the years we have persons coming in saying, I got sick from eating there and I got sick. And some of these events are catering events or even wedding itself. And there are some people who never come in because they feel embarrassed that, oh gosh, I got a foodborne illness, I had a lot of diarrhea and vomiting, and they feel embarrassed to come into the department to report. But it is your responsibility to report. However, as I'm saying is that over the years, we have recognized that hot holding and cold holding or temperature, the whole maintenance of the temperature is important in prevention of foodborne illnesses. So that is why we seek to ensure that the vendors who vend on the roadsides, especially during these activities, they ensure that the foods are kept hot until it is.
So let me ask you, I've seen in small restaurants and in Roseau and elsewhere, whereby people have bulbs. You know, you have chicken or whatever it is, and there is a bulb that's on. Does it emit the same level of it? Maybe not, most likely. I mean, is that standard, or is that, you know,
a bulb, to keep the food hot?
Yeah, they put a bulb in the...
That can't work.
Yeah, previously in years gone by, that was the favorite box, where you see a box of a bulb inside of it. And people had the concept that, all right, it kept the food hot. But no, it doesn't keep the food hot. Because it may keep the food hot directly under the bulb. The food that is directly under the bulb, it might keep it hot. But it has to be able to send out temperature throughout the entire thing, and know that it's not advisable. So in areas where we have gone and we see these people still have this thing, we recommend that they improve, they get the electrical ones, which is the best practice actually to put into their food places. All right.
How often are food handlers' permits revised and recertified? Is it like, do you get a food handler's permit and it's forever, or do you have to get recertified every 2 years, every 1 year, you know, that type of thing? Okay.
A food handler's permit is valid for 1 year. The medical is also valid for 1 year. All right? And our department has training activities throughout the year. For example, within Roseau, we have training sessions at least twice a month in Roseau. And in Portsmouth, which is also one of our largest areas, we have a training session at least twice a month also. And actually, we do get a lot of food handlers because, as I said, it's a requirement. And although some of the vendors do complain that, why do I have to do it every year? Why do I have to do the medical every year? But your medical certificate gives clearance at the time that you are well enough to handle food. You understand? And as I said, the importance of the training, it is important to educate you, to let you know what you should do, what you shouldn't do, and the practices that are important in preventing foodborne illnesses. So it's something that is legal and has to be done on an annual basis. We do have some people, especially throughout the Creole activities right now. We had people, coming in, they know they're supposed to be vending, but they come in and they say that, you know, I forgot, I had to go to the session and I couldn't go to the session. But the requirement is your medical certificate, your training, and then you can get certified. Without either one of them, we do not accept it.
I know one of the tests that is done in preparation to get that permit is that a stool culture should be done. Why?
We do have some, how would you say that, differing guidelines when it comes to this, because remember, medical certificate, when you go to get one as a food handler, it gives your status at present, you understand? So if you go and you get a stool test done, at present it will say, okay, I had ovoparasites, I had giardia at this time. It is very important, but it is something that the Ministry of Health will have to, or rather has arranged, it has set a standard for the department and for the health system as to whether we need to do food stool tests. In Portsmouth, we still do in some areas, but it depends entirely on the medical doctor who is seeing the individual. The medical doctor could decide, I want you to do a hepatitis A test, or I want you to do a stool test, or I need you to do a blood test. So we, environmental department, we're not really involved in the whole medical aspect of it. We leave that onto the medical profession to get it done.
So you don't think, in terms of some of the diseases that are often foodborne, it might be rather prudent of the ministry maybe to have guidelines in terms of the set test that they maybe would really want to have done, and then the doctor could add or subtract from it, but have a standard?
That is true, and I believe, yes, that we should set a standard, and then that'll be able to direct our doctors. But even also, the stool test is very important, because in the past, you would mostly see hookworms and ovoparasites and things like that. But even now, we see different types of parasites. We will see Giardia lamblia, we will see Toxoplasma gondii, we will see many other things that with the very long names, actually, compared. And with these, if you have any of these parasites, you have to go for a course of treatment prior to come back for recertification. Because if you have Giardia lamblia, we will not be able to certify you. You will have to go for your treatment, go back and do another stool test to ensure that you are cleared, and then we can certify you.
What is that parasite? What? How does somebody contract that?
Well, some of the parasites, you know, they're associated with poor sanitation within communities. All right? So where you have probably lack of water, or you have pit latrines, or issues with waste management. So you may get some of these things, you understand? And with somebody who had probably Giardia lamblia or something like that, we would have to probably assess the sanitation of the individual and make recommendations to improve sanitation generally within their area or where they live.
What about water sources, restaurants that don't have convenient water sources? Because I know that around town or in certain places, they're not connected to, let's say, a Dowasco line. And what does the unit do in that case?
Okay, one of the requirements for restaurants, food establishments, is that they must have potable water on site. And you'll find that some of our vendors within the Streets of Rosa itself, they may have small vending area where they can't have access to pipe one water itself. But they may have, like, although we don't really recommend that, but they may have like buckets with tap water itself. Understand? And we would speak with them and verify exactly whether the source is a pipe, because remember, Dowasco water is one of the is a potable water choice within Dominica, you understand? So we would work with them, and we do recommend that there are many challenges that our food establishments face when it comes to this, especially when they do not own the facilities, and especially when there are really lack of funds in doing that. But it is a requirement. And of course, we have been making some adjustments to our regulations when it comes to food hygiene. And although it is still in cabinet, we are hoping that with that in place, we can be able to enforce our regulations to the extent that we need to in when it comes to these establishments.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you a question. I work for a restaurant, and here it is, someone is serving me a meal. For you as a consumer, you know, what are some of the, you know, what do you look for in this, you know, do you look at the fingernails? Do you look at, you know, the what do you look for? I mean, what advice would you give to people? If you're assessing someone who has prepared a meal for you at a restaurant, they're coming to serve you, as an environmental officer with experience, what would you say to the public? What do you look for?
Okay. Each of us, everyone, has a right to safe food. all right? And therefore, as consumers, we have to make the decisions where we purchase food. You may not know the issues with at the back of the restaurant, but you are seeing the food handler coming to serve you. All right? So one of the first things you should do is observe the appearance of the food handler itself. A food handler should be properly attired with the necessary clothing, clean aprons, white specifically, or clean coats. All right, no sleeveless tops, and that is some of the things we see persons do vending, especially on the roadside. All right, that is not the acceptable attire of a food handler. The person should have a hair net, or their hair should be secured, and of course their nails, which is important. We do not accept acrylic nails, false nails, or painted fingernails as a food handler. If you have that, then you're probably in the wrong type of service. I understand? Because, you know, your nails are important because they're also involved in transmitting a bacteria or viruses, because your nails keep a lot of dirt on your fingernails, and that is also important. So these are some of the aspects as a food handler.
You know, I'm picturing all of this as you're saying it, but I can't help but think of, you know, when it's really hot and we tend to sweat a lot. What do we do in terms of the sweat? How do we assess that? Because sometimes, you know, even when I'm cooking at home, I am sweating and I do this, and you know, sometimes your hand, the sweat falls into the food. Or what do we do in that case?
Well, this is where personal hygiene and personal habits should be observed. You're cooking and then you tend to take your hands to wipe your face. Then automatically your mind should think that, you know what, I just contaminated my hands, I need to wash my hands. Understand? And we don't think of it in that aspect. That's why I go to restaurants and I observe food handlers who cook, and just stand and look at them, and they don't wash their hands at all. They touch their nose, they scratch themselves, they pick up a dirty equipment, and they don't wash their hands. And I seem to think that we don't consider hand washing as a very important aspect in food safety, but it is. Because there we can prevent the occurrence of foodborne illnesses within our establishment and within our population. So, you know, this is what management and even the food handler needs to play a very active role in enforcing hand washing, hand hygiene throughout the establishment. So,
you should take off your wedding bands and all of that too. Jewelry and no rings. And
you have a lot of dangling jewelry, your wristbands, your... a lot of rings on your fingers. You know, when you move your ring, what do you see? As a they call it quartz, actually. You understand? So that is why it is important, especially when you are doing, when you are kneading flour like that. Some people use their hands, some don't. You understand? Some use a spoon and go through the entire process without using their hands until it comes to actually forming the base itself. They do that. But when you do a lot of preparation on site of your hands itself, you have to ensure that your hands are free of jewelry, free of your nails are short, no acrylic nails, as I said, no dangling stuff, or even your earrings. They should be minimal. Because let's say you're cooking a soup pot, and then you miss your diamond earring, or you miss your large hoop earring, and it fell into the soup pot. Then you have somebody purchasing your soup, and then as a physical hazard right within your soup pot, because I get it and I decide to buy it very quickly, and you understand, and I damage my teeth, and then you will have situations to take care of.
I mean, this is
and there's so much that goes into this. I don't think that we always consider it, you know, especially with food handlers, you know, handling money. You know, you take your hands, you handle money, then you come back. And but I know that there are some places who there's hand sanitizers right there, and you know, which is good. But even the hand sanitizer too doesn't always protect against.
And you talk about the money aspect also, and we tend to advise vendors, if you have a cashier, designate that cashier to do the money handling. Don't have the person mixing and multitasking for the thing, because you will handle money and then you will forget. You will never wash your hands, because that is not what you're not supposed to be involved in food. You understand? So it's best that you have somebody designated for cashing and the other person's involved in preparation of the food.
Okay. So let's take a break, and then we're going to talk about smoked meats. You know, people smoke meats, and what do you do? So we're going to talk about a bit about that when you come back.
At Jolly's Pharmacy, your health and wellness is our passion. No wonder Jolly's Pharmacy provides the widest variety of the highest quality vitamin supplements and remedies for your lifestyle activity and nutritional needs. Take care of your body. Get the Multivitamins Advantage Supply to enhance, promote, improve, repair, and revitalize your body. Jolly's for the complete line of preventative and curative health supplies and tonics. Rejuvenate with men's and women's one-a-day tablets. Boost concentration. Try Centrum Silver and Omega-3s to build your immune and nervous system functions. Strengthen your cardiovascular system. Boost bone health. For stamina, get all your natural balanced megabytes herbal supplements. Men's daily formula for sexual energy and function. Saw Palmetto, plus supplements to soothe joint pain. Feel like a dynamo. Get up and go. Catch back your mojo at Jolly's, Dominica's principal healthcare pharmacy. Why? Because you deserve more from a drugstore.
You're listening to Health Vibes.
All right, so we're back and we were talking about, you know, smoke meats. It's a good time of year. I myself like my smoke.
My granny loves that.
Right. So, you know, someone has smoked chicken or pork. They do not have a refrigerator. How long can this meat last? I mean,
how do you preserve this kind of food?
One of the ways you can preserve it is that you can store them in packaging, all right? You can package them, as you can see, you know, when they send the smoked meats to sit for sale to the public at Whitchurch or the supermarkets, you see them in plastic bags that are tightly sealed, right? What they try to do is remove the air out of the package, the vacuum package to an extent, so that removing the air will extend the life of the product. Because, you know, if you allow the smoked meat to remain open all the time, what it does, it becomes rancid. It starts to turn, smell sour to an extent, you understand? So one of the main ways is that you can vacuum pack it, or you can package it and place it into your freezer. Well, you said that the person doesn't have a freezer, okay? But the most important thing is keeping in air out of the product and storing it in a dry place itself.
Because in the past, when, you know, refrigerators were not as popular like now, people would actually wrap them in cloth. You know, take all the meats and wrap it up in cloth. Was that good?
I'm not sure as the aspect of the cloth, but you could wrap them in paper packaging and store them in a closed container.
Okay.
That will assist. As long as you leave it out, you expose it to moisture, then it starts to get rancid and have an off.
But you said that this meat would have to be done very dried.
Yes, you would have to ensure that they are properly smoked. You know, sometimes you smoke meat and it's not done properly, and then you may have raw sections of the meat, and then that can also lead to spoilage pretty quickly.
But the climate is so different now. If I buy a banana today, by tomorrow night, because it's so hot, because there's so much heat in my home, it's already like fully ripe.
I know.
I've never seen it. Everything gets spoiled so quickly. You have it out, it's just gone. So I think that we have to really be particular in how we preserve food now, and not so much focus on the before, because, you know, the climate is unusually hot these days. So I think that would play a huge factor in how we really do preserve our food.
Then we'd recommend that you refrigerate or you freeze. All right, that will extend the storage of the food item as long as it is securely packaged, properly packaged. Because even if it's in your refrigerator and the package gets damaged, then you also have freezer burden.
So let me ask you, around this time of year, many schools have meals prepared at school. You know, you send stuff, they cook. Is your office very involved in what happens at those schools in terms of, you know, the preparation and the ensuring that the food quality and safety is you know?
Well, one of the things is that most of the schools, they do have food vending programs, okay? And the requirements must be met for these canteens itself, you understand? The persons who come in to cook for the children on a daily basis, they must be certified. And one of the things we do recommend to the principals is that if you're having a fundraising event, even the persons who come in to assist within the event has to ensure that they are certified as food handlers. You understand? Because even we do have, like in Roseau, Some schools, when they want to have a Creole breakfast, they call and they said, you know what, we need to have a Creole breakfast at our school, and we have around 10 parents and we need to get them certified. They cannot attend our normal sessions, but they can ask and we will come into the school and do a session of training to them so that the people are prepared and they will get their food handlers permit. So we accommodate the principals and the schools and the committees. In a sense, so we really want to put that.
Good. What are some of the areas that you focus on in those trainings?
Mm-hmm. Good question.
All right. One of the most important things is that we focus on personal hygiene, the aspects of hand washing, you understand? Your attire, how you should present yourself. Also in the preparation of food, the storage, the handling, I mean, in preparation, like how you go ahead thawing your chicken, how you go ahead storing the food after you prepared it, how you serve it. We also discuss clean and sanitization because that is one of the aspects. We also find that our establishments fail also. The aspects of cleaning and sanitizing, pest control, all of these areas we focus on, and foodborne illnesses, of course. The types of foodborne illness, what you can do to prevent it, and all of this we do.
Nice. So let's kalalu is one of the good dishes that we find.
It's our national dish,
right,
isn't it?
Very popular during this time of year. But it's one of the foods that people tend to get food poisoned easily from. Why? And how can you make your kalalu in the morning? How do you ensure that this doesn't occur?
All right. We spoke about the hot food should be kept hot and cold food should be kept cold. If you're planning on pre-cooking, you know, and you plan to cook at your home and you bring to your vending unit, wherever it is, or to your restaurant, one of the most important things is that when you cook, is either you cool quickly and store. You understand? Because let's say you cook this evening and you want to serve for tomorrow. You have to ensure that you cool quickly, you store in shallow containers.
How do you cool quickly?
You can create an ice bath to cool it quickly.
Because
the important thing is to prevent the growth of bacteria. You understand? So you cool quickly, you store in shallow containers and you refrigerate within your refrigerator and you store. All right? Another thing, in the morning, if you cook and you're going to be serving at 9 o'clock, once you cook, you have to ensure that you hold it in containers, insulated containers, that can maintain the temperature so that when you get it to your vending area, it is still hot. And then there you can increase the temperature and maintain it throughout. You understand? But another thing you have to consider also is that when we have things like kalalu, the types of food product we use within the kalalu, you understand, can also help persons to get sick. Or even not even that also. We have persons who are allergic
to crabs.
And one of the things we find that our vendors do is that when they vend within these activities, they tend to mix their
meat kinds.
Not even the meat, the spoons and the serving utensils. You understand? Because I think that's one of the aspects we don't consider when we vend into people is that the importance of allergic reactions.
Especially if you're allergic to shellfish.
Sure. Yes. Okay, because you may be allergic to shellfish, crabs, lobsters, or even fish itself. Some people are allergic to pork or something like that. So when you go to the vending area, each food item should have their own serving utensils. The vendor should not put all their serving utensils, which they tend to do, in one container and put water in it. That is not the way. Okay?
In that manner,
you cross contact. I ask for a pork, and instead, I may have some crab in my pork because they use the same utensils, or these utensils that they were serving was in a dish of water with the serving utensil for pork. So there you have, you could have
cross-contamination.
Call it cross-contact.
Wow.
Cross-contact. So you may have contact with the food, and you as a vendor are not aware that you had cross-contact with the food. You understand? So
this is really a good point. This is a great point. Because I've seen that myself, you know, and I would believe that this is information that food handlers are taught during the training. So why are they not implementing it? Is it because everybody's so busy and, you know, we want to be convenient and sometimes it's too much of a hustle to work with all these different things?
You see, in vending, one of the things we should always consider is food safety. Food safety should be a priority, but we fail to do that. We think of the fast money and we compromise food safety during these events because you see a long line of persons waiting to purchase and you hustle for it. And you don't really think of food safety. You think of my dollars standing out there. So That is something we need to do, consider food safety a priority and ensure that we serve food that is safe to the public. You understand? And then we consider that, you know, if I don't do this, I might have a foodborne illness occurrence in my hands. Mm-hmm. So we need to look at it and balance the situation.
Mm-hmm. Now, when somebody does get, let's say, a foodborne illness, do you recommend that they call the environmental health department?
Yes, we do.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If you purchase food anywhere and you probably a few hours later or next day you start to become sick, it is important that you call us, you understand? We'll come in. Because if you just stay at your home and just say, a set of you all got sick and just call and say, okay, 10 of us got sick, and that was it, that is not adequate information. Mm-hmm. We will maintain confidentiality. Mm-hmm. We need to know exactly what did you eat.
Okay.
And then we may need to question you as to more than what you ate last night. It could be mm-hmm. something you ate yesterday. Mm-hmm. Because remember, in certain cases of foodborne illness, it doesn't mean that it's the kalu I just ate a few hours ago.
Yeah, that's true.
It could mean it's a pie I ate yesterday morning that got me sick. Mm-hmm. However, a foodborne illness outbreak means one or two more persons exhibiting the same symptoms mm-hmm. from a specific food item.
Mm-hmm. What happens if, let's say, you eat at a restaurant? Later on in the evening, you begin to vomit, you begin to feel sick, nauseous, and all this kind of stuff. And you may be the only person that might have contacted the restaurant to say, listen, I got sick. Mind you, there may be a few other people, but they didn't come forward. Mm-hmm. Then what happens in that case? Because then the restaurant could turn around and say, well, nobody else has contacted mm-hmm. us. You're the only person. Mm-hmm. But so how do you deal with that issue?
Well, that is why we advise that you contact the environmental mm-hmm. department. Mm-hmm. And then persons who do get sick, they may go to the healthcare facilities. So mm-hmm. then we can also get that information from the healthcare mm-hmm. facilities. Mm-hmm. You understand? So let's say about five persons reported at the hospital saying that they were sick from eating food. Then we have a common ground.
Right.
Then we'll have to go ahead and decide what was the menu, what did you eat, what was common in what each of you all ate. Was it boiled eggs? What is kalaloo? Mm-hmm. And then we identify that common factor and then we go out and we go to the restaurant to find out what menu did you have yesterday? What was served? What are the procedures of food handling that were established, that you implemented throughout that day? You understand? How is your hand washing? Do you have any of your food handlers who are sick? We question the management. Mm-hmm. We also question the person who got sick to find out their history of eating and all of that.
Mm-hmm. But are there in terms of the law, are there any how should I put that? I don't want to say punishment, but I mean what is in law in terms of those restaurants? I mean, can you shut them down? Can you make recommendations? I mean, what is in law for that?
I mean, I don't want to answer that question, but we make recommendations for improvement. And in some cases, we have had cases of foodborne illnesses where management stepped up and decided, you know, because it's a bad name for your establishment. And there's cases where the establishment have really stepped up and paid for some of the medical care for mm-hmm. some of the persons who got sick. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
For that aspect. But what we do sometimes have is that persons don't call. You will hear about it. I think probably people have the concept that they're embarrassed to call mm-hmm. in to say, you know what, I went for days, I had diarrhea for days, mm-hmm. my eating food from someplace. So mm-hmm. we want to encourage the public to call in, give us your information, and we will maintain confidentiality as to the information that mm-hmm. you give us, because it's our job to maintain confidentiality. And we will handle it in the manner that we should.
Mm-hmm. Okay? So I just want you to just walk us through, for listeners out there, some of the foods that you've seen that are easily contaminated and people can get food poison easily from. I know potato salad is one of them.
Are vegetables, steamed vegetables, one of them?
Mm-hmm. All right. Yes, there are a list of foods that mm-hmm. are, well, they call them potentially hazardous foods. Mm. Understand? For example, milk products, meat products, chicken, mm-hmm. fish, as you said, the vegetables, steamed mm-hmm. vegetables. You have potato salad, macaroni salad, because they have the Irish potato and they have the mayonnaise in it, you understand? So those are some of the things that they encourage the growth of bacteria very easily. Mm-hmm. They're ideal foods for
roti as well.
Yes, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
So we recommend to people in that, you know, the most important thing is if you're going to buy hot foods, ensure that it is hot and piping hot. When you're going to purchase salads also, on the roadside, at the vending booths, ensure that it's on ice. Your salad should be on ice. They ensure that the vendors have them in a ice bath, where the food is currently completely surrounded by an ice bath. And that goes for potato salad, vegetable salads, and all of this. All of this should be bought on ice. Cold food should be kept cold at 41 degrees Fahrenheit and below, and hot food should be kept hot at 141 degrees Fahrenheit and above. And our vendors tend to think that, you know what, I will come to a vending booth and I'll tell you, you know, your stuff is not hot or it's not cold. And they'll say, how do you know? I said, let me take my thermometer and show you exactly what your temperature is. And really, if you don't have that, you can't verify it. One of the things we have also seen that some of our vendors do is that, you know, they season the meat and they think that once I season my meat and leave it in a bucket, that's it, it's good.
Oh, once you put salt on it,
yeah,
it's good.
No, it's not. I have seen it also. And we encourage our vendors, even if you have seasoned it, you ensure that you keep it cold. Get a cooler and you maintain the coldness of that food until you have finished with it. Because what happens is that, for example, like in carnival activities where it is hot, hot, hot.
Yes.
Or even now or at our temperature, you'd find that the meat gets to room temperature very quickly. And then you have, it's time to make the own juices. And then as it comes down to the temperature, then the temperature becomes ideal for the growth of bacteria. And then you have the meat starting to have a funny smell. It gets slimy. And in situations where I've seen that, we usually take the chicken and go with it.
Yes, we have a caller. Good morning, caller.
Good morning.
Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Carlton.
Good morning to you, sir. How are you?
I'm okay. And good morning to you, Miss Fonte.
Good morning.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
And your guest. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let me take this opportunity to wish you guys happy independence because, you know, I'm not there, so enjoy it for me.
Thank
you,
sir.
Same to you. Same to you.
Okay. The question, it might sound very silly, but it's a little concern for me. you know, some food are made hot and have to be served cold. Because you just mentioned about the ice pack on potato salad and macaroni salad. And both of them have to be cooked first. And then serve cold. At what stage do you put them on ice?
Okay.
After they question. Have been cooked. After they have been cooked.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes, thanks. What happens is that after you have, for example, potato salad.
After you've cooked the potatoes, you let the potatoes cool.
You cool
down.
It down a little bit, right? And then you place it on ice. It cannot, for example, like hot foods should not remain for more than 4 hours at the room temperature. So you understand? So as soon as you cooked hot foods, you maintain the temperature. For cold foods also, it should not remain more than 6 hours at normal room temperature. So as soon as you have cooked cold foods, you maintain. So for example, potato salad, which has some people, what they do also, let's say they do certain salads. They might use tuna and some other stuff like that. They ensure that the tuna is cool because they know the product is going to be kept cold. They cool some of their products during preparation stage. So while they're preparing it, it maintains the cool temperature. So you just immediately after finishing, you just, if you're going to move it to another area or you're going to hold it, you can hold it on your refrigerator until you move it, and then you place it onto your ice bath and you maintain the temperature throughout. Okay, the most important thing is to prevent time temperature abuse, okay? If it has to be kept hot, you keep it hot. If it has to be kept cold, you keep it cold. Because, you know, bacteria needs time to grow, and bacteria needs the ideal temperature also to grow. So if you remove the time, so you don't leave it out at room temperature for very long, and you maintain the temperature, that is one way you can prevent the growth of bacteria, and of course, you can prevent the occurrence of foodborne illnesses within the population.
I have another question for you. Do you need to ask permission to visit a restaurant as a health, as an environmental health officer? So you, today, you're walking down the road, and do you just show up with your ID and your equipments and stuff and say, well, today we are here to monitor how you prepare your foods and... Or do you have to say to these people, to the proprietor, that you are coming today?
No, it is not a requirement to alert the restaurant owner, hotel owner that you are coming. if you alert the individual,
they will do everything.
Of course, they will stay up all night. They will clean the establishment. Next day, when you come, everything is right. Good
Spick
to go. Understand? Because we as environmental officers, when you go to inspect, we want to be able to come and see exactly what is there. Mm-hmm. Take into consideration that what you see at the moment is a portrait, a picture of what exactly is occurring in the restaurant.
Every day.
You understand? It could be also that at that time, you know, my fridge broke down, my
Short
pipe
staff.
Broke, my staff is sick, mm-hmm. I forgot my coat at home, I don't have any head covering because my supplies ran out. But you have to take into consideration that it's not only one inspection that an officer does within an establishment in a year. An officer could do 3 inspections within a year. And after that 3 inspections, then you can say, you know what, that establishment there really has some serious issues with food safety. Okay? So we don't have to alert you when we're coming. Mm-hmm. And we find a lot of hoteliers or restaurants find that, you mean you don't even alert me when I come in? I mean, and they really want to know, but we don't have to. It's not a responsibility to that.
The Ministry I don't think of Health, that you should.
No. True. The Ministry of Health gives us the authority to enter any establishment to conduct the work of the Ministry of Health at any time. Good. So even our nighttime bars, they are only open at nighttime. We can decide that, you know what, we're going to be doing some inspections from 7 to 10 tonight, and we have the authority to enter it. In some cases, we have met hostile vendors, the hostile managers and operators. And in some cases, we do seek the help of the police when we go to those things because, you know, we most of the department is comprised of women, actually, now. Mm. So we do seek police support when we go to do some of our inspections, especially at nighttime or certain events. Mm. So we do that.
But I truly like this. I mean, because we have to recognize that it's, you know, food quality is health quality. And so, I mean, environmental health officers, they have their role to play, because, I mean, if I know, well, this place knows that this is the standard, I can be evaluated at any given time without any notice, I must maintain my standards. And my standard is going to benefit, you know, my customers.
But you should have a standard irrespective anyway, because yes, you're serving food. And this is really, like she said, food safety is of paramount importance. Before we end the show, is there anything that you'd like to highlight, or, you know, you'd like to say to food vendors, restaurant, hoteliers during this season in particular?
All right. What I really want to encourage our vendors to give us the support when we go to do inspections throughout this season itself, especially at the Creole in the Park, Creole Festival, Creole Bodlame, and the NCC Yucala Slipso. We cannot do coverage of all the events, you understand? As environmental department, we cannot do that. However, event organizers, if you know you're going to have a large event where you have a lot of food being offered for sale, it's wise that you contact the environmental health department so we can point out to you the importance of the requirements for vending, especially of the vendors who vend at these events, you understand? So contact us to get information or the requirements that is needed. Food safety should be considered a priority. It doesn't have to be at these events. It could be at our restaurants, at our home. And we should ensure that we practice safe practices. As we mentioned, hand washing is an important aspect of it. And we should practice hand washing. Sanitizers doesn't replace hand washing.
Sure.
You understand? Because sanitizers only kill a certain aspect or percentage of the germs that's on our hand. And if we do in preparation on site, sanitizers doesn't do anything. Mm-hmm. Understand? So I want to encourage our vendors to give us the support. They know the requirements. They know that every year they have to come in for certification. Consumers, practice safe buying this independence activity. Food safety is my right, it is your right, and I want to encourage everybody to keep it safe and successful during this event and make food safety a priority.
Well said.
Thank you very much, Ms. Charles, for being here today and for representing the Environmental Health Department. We really thank you for this information, this wealth of knowledge that you've shared with us today.
Well, so Dominica, go out and do something productive. Remember that it's a good time for us. It's our culture, but be safe and do everything in moderation. Take care.
Happy Independence.
Thank you.
You're listening to Health Vibes. You were listening to Health Vibes, a production of Jolly's Pharmacy Limited.